but I want to be there so I can look in his eyes when he receives his sentence. That is exactly why you must be gone. Can't you understand? You'll give something away. With a deep breath and a grunt, Rabban finally backed down. May I come to the execution, at least? He sounded dangerously close to pouting. It depends on the timing. The Baron stared at his ring-studded fingers and tinkled their metal against the smooth surface of the sphere in his lap in his habitual rhythm. At the very least, I'll make sure the event is recorded for your enjoyment. The Baron got out of his chair with an effort and cinched the sash around his tighter-than-usual lounge robe. With a sigh, he circled the elaborate room on bare feet, saw the ornate bathtub with its complicated temperature and massage controls. Since his body continued to be plagued by mysterious pains, he decided to take a long and luxurious bath, if he could find someone to serve him properly here on Kaitane. Rabban, still displeased, stood on the threshold of the Baron's opulent guest quarters. "What shall I do then, Uncle?" "Take a lighter and board the first available highliner. I want you to go to Arrakis and watch over the spice production there. Keep adding to our profits." The Baron smiled at him, then waggled his fingers to shoo the nephew away. "Oh, don't look so gloomy. Go hunt a few more freemen if you like, just to amuse yourself. You've already done your part in this plot, and done it well." He made his voice sound soothing. "But we have to be very careful, especially now. Just pay attention to what I do and try to learn from it." Grabbing something to eat from a sampling tray that hovered by the archway, Rabban departed. Alone at last, the Baron began to contemplate how best to find a young, soft-skinned boy to tend him in his bath. He wanted to be completely relaxed and prepared for the following day. Tomorrow he would have nothing to do but observe and enjoy the event, as young Leto Atreides found himself caught in more traps than he could begin to understand. Soon there would be no more House Atreides at all. What matters more, the form of justice or the actual outcome? No matter how a court may dissect the evidence, the foundation of genuine truth remains unblemished. Unfortunately, for many of the accused, such genuine truth is often known only to the victim and the perpetrator. All others must make up their own minds. Lansrad Law, Codicils and Analyses. On the morning of the trial in Lansrad Court, Leto Atreides chose his wardrobe carefully. Others in the same situation might have worn their most expensive finery, the grandeur of mer-silk shirts, pendants, and earrings, along with whale fur-lined capes and stylish caps adorned with feathers and baubles. Instead, Leto dressed in plain dungarees and a blue and white striped shirt, with a navy blue fisherman's cap, the simple garb he would have to wear if he could no longer be a duke. In a sash at his waist he carried a pouch of fishing lures and an empty sheath for a knife. He wore no Atreides insignia and no ducal signet ring. An ordinary commoner, which was all he would be if found guilty, Leto showed the Lansrad by his humble demeanor that he would survive somehow. Even simple things would be enough for him. Following his father's example, he had always tried to treat his loyal men well, to such an extreme that many of the servants and soldiers considered Leto one of their number, a comrade in arms. Now, as he groomed himself for trial, he began to think of himself as a plain man, and discovered that the feeling wasn't so bad. It made him realize the tremendous burden of responsibility he had shouldered since the death of the old duke. Being a poor fisherman might actually be a relief in certain ways. He wouldn't have to worry about plots, shifting alliances and betrayals in the Imperium. Unfortunately, though, Kylea would never want to be a fisherman's wife. And I cannot let my people down. In a curt letter from Caladan, his mother had expressed her complete disagreement with his demand for a trial by forfeiture. To her, the loss of stature associated with the destruction of House Atreides would be a huge blow, even though she now, temporarily in her mind, lived an austere life among the sisters in isolation. With the decline of House Richies, Helena had married into House Atreides as a way to stabilize her family's waning fortunes. After Emperor Elrud had withdrawn their quasi-fief of Arrakis and turned it over to the Harkonnens. As for Helena's dowry, House Atreides had received political power, a Choam directorship, Landsrad voting privileges. But Duke Paulus had never brought his wife the fabulous riches she had wanted, and Leto knew she must harbor hopes of returning to the former glories of her family. All of that would be forever impossible if he lost this gambit. After receiving the early morning summons, Leto met his legal team in the corridor outside his cell. Two brilliant Elakan lawyers, Clear Ruit and Bruda Vile, women renowned for their criminal defense work. They had been offered by the Ixian ambassador in exile, Kamar Pilru, and thoroughly interviewed by Thufir Hawat. The attorneys wore dark business suits and would follow the legal forms. Though in this unusual trial, Leto knew it would be primarily up to him and his own personality. He certainly had no hard evidence in his favor. Clear Ruit handed him a thin sheet of Redulian crystal that contained a brief legal pronouncement. "I am sorry, Lord Leto. This came to us only moments ago." Already feeling dread, Leto scanned the words. Beside him, Hawat's shoulders sagged, as if he had guessed the document's contents. Romber pressed close, trying to read the etchings on the crystal. "What is it, Leto? Let me see." "The Tribunal of Magistrates has ruled that no Bene Gesserit truthsayers may speak on my behalf. Such testimony will not even be introduced." Romber sputtered an indignation. "Vermilion hells! But everything is admissible in a trial by forfeiture. They can't make such a ruling." The other Elakan attorney shook her head, and her expression remained bland. "They have taken the position that the weight of all other imperial law argues against it. Numerous rules and statutes explicitly forbid truthsayer testimony. The requirements of evidence may be loosened in a forfeiture proceeding such as this, but the magistrates have determined that even loose rules must not go too far." "So, no truthsayers." Romber scowled, fully sullen now. "That was the best thing we had going for us." Leto held his head high. "Then we'll just have to do this on our own." He looked at his friend. "Come now, I'm not usually the one to shore up your optimism." "On a brighter note," Bruda Vile said, "the Tleilaxu have removed the pilot of their attacked frigate from the witness list. They provided no explanation." Leto heaved a long sigh of relief, but Hawat cautioned him. "We will still hear plenty of damning testimony, my duke." Silently, he accompanied his advisers into the crowded Landsrad courtroom. At the head of a long aisle, he took a seat between them at the defense table below a towering bench for the magistrates who would hear the case. Ruit whispered in his ear, but he didn't focus on her words. Instead, he closely studied the names of the assigned magistrates. 7 dukes, barons, earls, counts, and lords, randomly chosen from among the great and minor houses of the Landsrad. These men would decide his fate. Since the Tleilaxu belonged to no royal house and had been spurned for membership even after their takeover of Ix, they were not represented in the Landsrad. In the days preceding the trial, outraged Beni Tlaloc's dignitaries had shouted in the palace courtyards, demanding justice. But after the Tlaloxu attempt on Leto's life, Sardaukar guards had kept them silent. Now, with a rustle of robes and formal uniforms, the chosen magistrates filed solemnly into the courtroom. They took seats at the curved stonewood bench that loomed over the defense table. The colorful banners and crests of their houses hung behind each chair. Having been coached by his attorneys and Thufir Hawat, Leto recognized all of them. Two of the magistrates, Baron Terkilian Sor of Four Anbus and Lord Bane Ogari of Hagal, had been strong economic trading partners with House Atreides. One, the black-haired Duke Prad Vidal of Ekaz, was an avowed enemy of the old Duke, an ally of the Harkonnens. Another, Count Anton Meitsch, was reputed to be susceptible to bribery, making him easily adaptable to the needs of the Harkonnens, since neither Romber nor the loyal Mantat had gotten to him first. 2-2, he thought. The other three magistrates could go either way. But he detected the rank odor of betrayal in the air. He saw it in the cold expressions of the judging panel, the way they avoided making eye contact with him. Have they already decided my guilt? We have more bad news, Duke Leto. Bruda Vile hesitated before using his former title. Her face was squarish and stern, but oddly passionless, as if she'd seen so much injustice and manipulation that nothing bothered her anymore. We've only just discovered that one of the three undecided magistrates, Rincon of House Fazil, lost an immense fortune to Ix in a secret trade war. It had to do with ring asteroid mining in the Clytem system. 5 years ago, Rincon's advisors barely kept him from declaring a blood feud against Dominic Vernius. The other attorney nodded and lowered her voice. We have heard a rumor, Monsieur Atreides, that Rincon sees your personal downfall as his only chance to get even with Ix, now that House Vernius has gone renegade. Leto broke out in a cold sweat and made a disgusted sound. Does any part of this trial concern what actually happened in the Highliner? Both Bruda Vile and Clear Ruit looked at him as if he had uttered the most ridiculous comment imaginable. 3-2, my Duke, Hawat said. We must therefore win over both of the undecided judges and lose none of the tentative support we've counted on. It'll turn out all right, Romber said. The windowless, armored courtroom had once been a ducal chancery during the construction work on Kaitane. Its vaulted, Gothic ceiling was inset with military paintings and the designs and shields of the great houses. Leto focused on the red hawk crest of the Atreides among the other shields and coats of arms. Though he tried to remain stoic, a terrible feeling of loss swept over him, a longing for what might never be again. In a short time, he had brought down everything his father had left him, and House Atreides was crashing toward ruin. When he felt tears welling in his eyes, he cursed himself for the momentary weakness. All was not lost. He could still win. He would win. Iciness infused him, and he stemmed the threatening flow of despair. The Landsrad was watching, and he had to be strong enough to face whatever needed to be done here. He could ill afford despair, or any other emotion. Behind him, observers filed into the courtroom, speaking in low, excited tones. Two larger tables flanked the defense table at which he sat. His enemies took seats at the table on the left, designated representatives of the Tlaloxu, probably sponsored by the Harkonnens and other Atreides foes. But the hated Baron and his entourage sat far back in the simple spectator seats, as if to keep their hands completely clean of the matter. At the other table sat allies and friends of the Atreides. Leto nodded to each of them with a confident smile. but his thoughts were far from brave, and he had to admit he didn't have much of a case even now. The prosecutors would present the evidence of weapons fired from the Atreides combat pod, first-hand accounts of dozens of neutral parties who claimed the shots couldn't have come from anywhere but the tiny craft berthed in Leto's ship. Even without the Tleilaxu pilot as a witness, the other observers would be sufficient. The offsetting testimony of his companions and crew wouldn't be enough, nor would the numerous family friends who would act as character witnesses. "Perhaps the denial of truth-sayers will give us sufficient grounds for an appeal," Clearruit suggested. But Leto took no comfort from this. Then, through a side passage, the somber Tleilaxu prosecution team entered with their own attorneys and twisted Mentat scholars. They came with minimal fanfare, but much clanking and commotion, as they brought with them a diabolical-looking machine. It rolled in on creaking wheels with a clatter of hinges and bars. A hush fell over the room as the spectators craned forward to get a better look at the most frightening contraption any of them had ever seen. "This has to be intentional," Leto thought, "to make me more uneasy." The Tleilaxu ponderously hauled the ominous machine past Leto's defense table. The gray-skinned men glared at him with fiery, dark eyes. The audience began to buzz and whisper. Presently the Tleilaxu team stopped, leaving their device in the center of the main speaking floor, below the curved stonewood bench of the chosen judges. "What is this?" One of the central magistrates, Baron Terkilian Sor, leaned forward, scowling. The leader of the Tleilaxu team, a wiry man who had not been introduced by name, looked hatefully at Leto, then gazed up at the questioner. "My lords, in all the recorded annals of imperial law, the specific subsections pertaining to trial by forfeiture are few but clear. Should the accused not succeed in his legal bid, he shall lose everything he possesses without exception. Everything."
"I can read."
Terkilian Sor continued to scowl. "And what does this have to do with your contraption here?" The Tleilaxu spokesman drew a deep breath. "We intend to claim not only the holdings of House Atreides, but also the actual person of the heinous criminal Duke Leto Atreides himself, down to his cells and genetic material." While the audience muttered in shock, the Tleilaxu attendees worked controls on the machine, causing hidden saw blades to whir, and electrical arcs to crackle from one long needle to another. The ominous machine was outrageous and exaggerated, obviously by design. "With this device, we will exsanguinate Duke Leto Atreides in this very courtroom, draining him of every drop of his blood. We will flay the skin from his body and remove his eyes for our testing and experimentation. Every cell will be ours, for whatever purposes the Tleilaxu determine to use them." He sniffed. "It is our right." Then the grayish little man smiled at Leto. Leto held steady and tried desperately not to show the discomfort raging inside. A trickle of cold sweat ran down his back. He wanted his lawyers to say something, but they held their damnable silence. "Perhaps the accused can even see an advantage to this fate," the Tleilaxu spokesman suggested with a wicked grin, "since he has no heirs. If he loses, there will be no more House Atreides. With his cells, however, we have the option of resurrecting him as a Gola." "To do their bidding," Leto thought, with horror. At the defense table, Romber glared defiantly at the Tleilaxu, while Thufir Hawat sat beside him like a statue. Flanking Leto on either side, the two Alakan attorneys scribbled notes. "Enough of this showmanship," boomed Lord Bane Ogari. "We can decide this matter later. Let us get on with the trial. I want to hear what the Atreides has to say for himself." though he fought not to show it, Leto suddenly knew he was lost. Every person present in the hall knew his professed hatred for the Tleilaxu, his clear support of the ousted Ixion family. He could summon character witnesses, but no one here really knew him. He was young and untried, thrust by tragedy into his role as Duke. The only time these members of the Landsrat had seen Leto Atreides was when he'd spoken before the council, revealing a glimpse of his hot temper. Sparks crackled from the Tleilaxu vivisection and execution device, like a hungry, waiting beast. Leto knew there would be no appeal. Before the first witness could be called, though, the immense brass inlaid doors at the rear of the hall slammed open against the stone walls. A hush fell over the courtroom, and Leto heard the crisp cadence of metal-heeled boots on the marbleite floor. Looking back to the grand entrance doors, he saw Crown Prince Shaddam, dressed in scarlet and gold imperial fur satins instead of his customary Sardaukar uniform. Followed by an escort of his elite force, the soon-to-be-crowned emperor strode forward, commanding the full attention of those in the hall. Four heavily armed men scanned the crowd in all directions, every muscle poised for violence. The trial by forfeiture was already highly unusual for the Landsrat court, but the appearance of the future Padishah emperor himself was unprecedented. Shaddam made his way up the long aisle and passed Leto with hardly a glance. The Sardaukar took positions behind the defense table, increasing Leto's feeling of uneasiness. Shaddam's face was stony, his upper lip slightly twisted. He gave no sign of his intentions. "Did my message offend him?" Leto wondered. "Does he mean to call my bluff? Will he crush me here in the hall before all the Landsrat? Who could oppose him if he did?" Reaching the towering bench, Shaddam looked up and announced, "Before this trial actually begins, I have a statement to make. Will the court recognize me at this time?" Though Leto didn't trust his distaff cousin, he had to admit that Shaddam looked especially regal and elegant. For the first time, he saw this man as a genuine presence in his own right, not just the shadow of his ancient father, Elrud. Shaddam's coronation was set for 2 days hence, to be followed immediately by his magnificent wedding to Anirul, events that Leto might never live to see. The powerful Bene Gesserit faction had thrown its support to Shaddam's upcoming reign, and all of the great and minor houses of the Landsrat wanted to stay on his good side. "Does he feel threatened by me?" The head magistrate bowed deeply and made an expansive gesture. "Sire, we are honored by your presence and your interest in this case. Of course the Landsrat Tribunal will hear you." Leto knew only the most basic facts about this magistrate, the Baron Lar Olin from the titanium-rich planet of Risp 7. "Please speak." Shaddam pointed over his shoulder in Leto's direction. "With the permission of the court, I'd like my cousin, Leto Atreides, to stand with me. I wish to address the matter of these malicious accusations, and, I hope, prevent the court from wasting the valuable time of all its members." Leto's mind raced, and he looked over at Hawat. "What is he doing? Cousin? The way he says it, the word sounds like a term of endearment. But he and I have never been close." Leto was merely the grandson of one of Elrud's daughters, by the ancient emperor's second wife, not even Shaddam's mother. The Carino family tree sprawled among the houses of the Landsrat. Any blood connection should have meant little to Shaddam. The head magistrate nodded. At the table beside Leto, his lawyers sat in astonishment, not knowing how to respond. Warily, Leto levered himself to his feet. With shaking knees, he marched forward to join the crown prince, standing a pace away from his side, on his left. While of similar height and facial appearance, The men were dressed in radically different fashion, representing two social extremes. Leto stood in his rough fisherman clothes, feeling like a dust mote in the middle of a whirlwind. He made a formal bow before Shaddam closed the gap between them, placing a hand on Leto's shoulder. The fine, loosely fitted satin of the Crown Prince's tunic cascaded over the arm of the young Atreides. "I speak from the heart of House Garino, the blood of the Padishah Emperors," Shaddam began. "With the supportive voices of all my ancestors who have ever associated with House Atreides. This man's father, Duke Paulus Atreides, fought bravely for the imperial cause against the rebels on Ikaz. Through battle and high peril, the Atreides family has never, to my knowledge, committed any treasonous or dishonorable act. All the way back to their heroism and sacrifice at the Bridge of Hrethgir during the Butlerian Jihad. Never. Never have they been cowardly murderers. I challenge any of you to disprove this." He narrowed his eyes, and the magistrates looked away uncomfortably. Shaddam stared from magistrate to magistrate. "Who among you, knowing the histories of your houses, can make the same claim? Who has displayed the same loyalty, the same unblemished honor? Few of us, if the truth be told, can compare with noble House Atreides." He let the silence hang, disturbed only by a sharp static discharge from the ominous Tleilaxu vivisection machine. "Ah, yes, and that is why we are here today, is it not, gentlemen? Truth and honor." Leto saw some of the magistrates nod in agreement, because they were expected to. But they looked perplexed. Imperial leaders never voluntarily addressed Lansrad courts. Why was Shaddam involving himself in such a relatively minor matter? "He read my message," Leto thought. "And this is his response." Still, he waited for the trap to appear. He didn't understand what he had gotten himself into, but Shaddam couldn't intend just to march in and rescue him. Of all the great houses in the Lansrad, the Carinos were among the most devious. "House Atreides has always taken the high road," Shaddam continued, his regal voice growing more powerful. "Always. And young Leto here has been indoctrinated into this family code of ethics, forced into his royal station early because of the senseless death of his great father." Shaddam removed his arm from Leto's shoulder and took a step forward, closer to the magistrates. "In my opinion, it would be impossible for this man, from this house, to intentionally fire upon Tleilaxu ships, as he has been accused of doing. Such an act would be abhorrent to everything House Atreides believes. Any evidence to the contrary must be false. My truth-sayers have confirmed this after speaking to Leto and his fellow witnesses." "A lie," Leto thought. "I spoke to no truth-sayers." "But, Royal Highness," Magistrate Prad Vidal said, with a dark scowl that lowered his black eyebrows, "the guns on his frigate showed evidence of having been fired. Are you suggesting that Tleilaxu ships were damaged by a convenient accident? A mad coincidence?" Shaddam shrugged. "As far as I am concerned, Duke Leto has explained this satisfactorily. I myself have taken a combat pod into orbit for skeet drone practice. The remainder of the investigation is inconclusive. Perhaps an accident, yes, but not caused by the Atreides. It must have been a mechanical malfunction." "But on two Tleilaxu ships?" Vidal said, in an incredulous tone. Leto looked around, speechless, watching the events play themselves out. Shaddam was about to begin his reign. If the Emperor himself threw his weight indisputably in support of Leto, would any of the representatives declare themselves enemies of the Crown? The repercussions could be severe and long-lasting. "This is all politics, Lansrad power plays, favors exchanged," Leto thought, struggling to keep his expression calm. "None of this has anything to do with the truth.
Now that the Crown Prince had made his stance clear, any magistrate who voted to convict Leto would be openly defying the next emperor. Even the enemies of House Atreides would be loath to risk that. "Who can say?" Shaddam responded, with a toss of his head that labeled the question irrelevant. Perhaps debris from the first accidental explosion hit the companion craft, damaging it less severely. No one believed the explanation for a moment, but the Crown Prince had given them a way out, a paper platform on which to stand. In low tones, the magistrates conferred among themselves. Some of them agreed that Shaddam's line of reasoning was plausible. They wanted to find some way to agree with the new emperor. But Vidal was not one of them. Sweat ran down his brow. Looking over his shoulder, Leto saw the Tleilaxu spokesman shaking his head in silent disapproval. In the tall chair that had been rigged for him at the prosecution table, he looked like a displeased child. The Crown Prince continued, "I am here, as is my right and duty as your supreme commander, to personally vouch for my eminent cousin, Duke Leto Atreides. I urgently request an end to this trial and the restoration of his title and properties. If you grant this request, I promise to send a contingent of imperial diplomats to the Tleilaxu to convince them to drop the matter and not to retaliate against the Atreides in any way." Shaddam fixed a long glance at the Tleilaxu, and Leto had the distinct impression that the emperor also had the gnomish men over a barrel. Somehow. Seeing that Shaddam stood by House Atreides, their hauteur crumbled. "And if the complainants won't agree?" Vidal inquired. Shaddam smiled. "Oh, they'll agree. I am even willing to open the imperial coffers to pay generous disaster relief for what was undoubtedly an unfortunate accident. It is my duty as your new ruler to maintain peace and stability throughout the Imperium. I cannot allow such a feud to destroy what my dear father built during his long reign." Leto caught Shaddam's gaze and detected a glimmer of fear beneath the statesmanship and bravado. Without words, Shaddam told Leto to keep his mouth shut, making Leto even more curious about what alarms his mysterious bluff had triggered. So he held his tongue. But could Shaddam afford to let him live afterward, not knowing what proof Leto might have against him? Following a short conference among themselves, Baron Lar Olin cleared his throat and announced, "It is the finding of this duly sworn Landsrad Council that all evidence against Leto Atreides is circumstantial and unprovable. Given such extreme doubts, there are insufficient grounds to proceed with the trial of such devastating consequences, especially in light of the extraordinary testimony of Crown Prince Shaddam Carino. We therefore declare Leto Atreides fully exonerated and restore to him his title and property." Stunned at his sudden good fortune, Leto found himself congratulated by the emperor-to-be, and then mobbed by his friends and supporters. Many of them were delighted to see him win. But despite his youth, Leto was not naive. He knew just as many of them were happy simply to see the Tleilaxu lose. All around him the courtroom erupted in cheers and thunderous ovations, with the exceptions of a few in attendance who remained conspicuously silent. Leto marked them for further consideration, and knew Thufir Hawat would be doing the same. "Leto, there is one more thing I must do," Shaddam said, his voice cutting through the din. Out of the corner of his eye, Leto saw something glint in the light. Shaddam's hand moved, snatching a jewel-handled knife from his sleeve, translucent blue-green like the Hagal quartz of the imperial throne. He raised it, moving quickly. Back at the bench, Thufir Hawat leaped to his feet, but too late. The crowd fell into an instant hush. Then, with a smile, Shaddam slipped the knife into the empty sheath at Leto's waist. "My congratulatory gift to you, cousin," he said in the most pleasant of tones. Carry this blade as a reminder of your service to me. We do what we must. Friendship and loyalty be damned. We do what we must. Lady Helena Atreides, her personal journals. Asimir Fenring brooded in his private apartments in shock. How can Shaddam do this to me? The message capsule with the formal imperial seal, the wax lion of House Carino, lay discarded on his bed. He had torn Shaddam's formal decree to shreds, but not before memorizing every word. A new assignment. A banishment. A promotion? Hasimir Fenring, an acknowledgment of your unfailing service to the Imperium and the throne of the Padishah Emperors, you are hereby appointed to a newly created post as official Imperial Observer on Arrakis. Because of this planet's vital importance to the Imperial economy, you shall have all necessary resources made available to your station. Blah, blah, blah. How could he dare do this? What a useless waste of his talent. What petty revenge to send Fenring off to a sand hole festering with worms and unwashed people. He fumed, wishing he could discuss the matter with the fascinating Margot Rashino Zia, whom he trusted more than he should. She was, after all, a Bene Gesserit witch. Because of the planet's vital importance, he snorted in disgust, then set about smashing everything breakable he could get his hands on. He knew Shaddam had banished him in a fit of pique. For a man with Fenring's capabilities, the new job was an insult, and it removed him from the center of Imperial power. He needed to be here, on Kaitain, at the hurricane's eye of politics, not lost out in some forgotten corner of space. But Shaddam's decree could not be questioned or denied. Fenring had 30 days to report to the notorious arid planet. He wondered if he would ever return. All persons are contained within a single individual, just as all time is in a moment, and the entire universe is in a grain of sand. Freeman saying. On the day of Shaddam IV's coronation and wedding, a carnival air prevailed on all the worlds of the Imperium. Jubilant crowds immersed themselves in drinking, dancing, sporting events, and fireworks exhibitions. Old Emperor Elrud had held his throne for so long that few people could remember the last time a new ruler had been crowned. In Kaitain's capital city, throngs gathered along the magnificent boulevards, lining up beside the route the royal procession would take. It was a sunny day, as usual, and vendors did a brisk business hawking souvenirs, commemorative items, and refreshments. Royal Carino flags fluttered in the breeze. Everyone wore their scarlet and gold to mark the occasion. Sardaukar soldiers guarded the convoluted route, wearing ceremonial gold brocade over their dress gray and black uniforms. Standing like stone guardians, they held their Lays rifles in the present arms position, unmoved by the blaring fanfare or the roar of the crowd. But they remained ready to react with deadly force at the slightest hint of threat to the Imperial presence. Boisterous cheers rose from thousands of throats as Crown Prince Shaddam and his betrothed Lady Anirul rolled by in a velvet-cushioned coach, pulled by 6 golden lions from Harmanthep. Braided with jewels, the animals' magnificent manes ruffled in the gentle breeze. Royal footmen and pikemen jogged alongside the carriage, which was barely obscured by the gossamer shimmer of a protective shield. Looking intensely regal, Anirul waved and smiled. She had shed her black Bene Gesserit robes and wore a waterfall of laces, ruffles, and pearl drops. Her tiara dazzled with prisms and jewels, catching the sunlight from the ever-cloudless sky. Beside her, Shaddam looked magnificent, with his reddish hair perfectly pomaded, his military-style uniform decked with braids and shoulder boards and clanking medals. Since the Crown Prince's marriage displayed no favoritism to any great or minor house, the Landsrat had accepted Anirul as the imperial consort, though many questioned her mysterious background and hidden rank in the Bene Gesserit. After the death of Elrud, though, followed by this grandiose coronation and wedding, the Imperium was awash in a sea of changes. Shaddam hoped to use that to his advantage. With a paternal smile fixed on his face, he scattered Solari coins and packets of gem dust to the crowd, following a tradition of imperial largesse that was believed to bring blessings upon a new reign. The people loved him. He was surrounded by wealth. With the snap of his fingers, he could obliterate entire worlds. This was exactly how he had imagined the role of emperor would be. A flourish of trumpets made joyful clarion sounds. "Won't you sit with me, Hasimir?" the willowy blonde asked, giving him a coquettish smile during the pre-coronation reception. Fenring couldn't tell if Margot Rashinozia had purposely made her voice sultry, or if it just came naturally to her. He held a plate of food containing exotic hors d'oeuvres. Poison snoopers fluttered like hummingbirds over the crowded guests. The day's ceremonies would last for hours upon hours, and the guests could relax and partake of refreshments at their leisure. Sister Margot Rashinozia stood taller than Fenring, and leaned intimately close to him when she spoke. Her coral and jet dress shimmered around the exquisite perfection of her form and features. She wore a Caledonian pearl necklace and a brooch encrusted with gold and precious stones. Her skin looked like rich, honeyed milk. Around them, in the balcony lobby of the Grand Theater, elegantly dressed noblemen and ladies chatted and drank Grand Cru wines from tall-stemmed glasses. The octave crystal hummed as glasses were touched together in repeated toasts. Within the hour, the assemblage would witness the climactic double event that would be held on center stage, the coronation of Padishah Emperor Shaddam Corino IV and his wedding to the Lady Anirul Sado Tonkin of the Bene Gesserit. Fenring nodded his large head and executed a brief bow to her. "I would be honored to sit next to you, lovely Margot." Balancing his plate, Fenring lowered himself onto the bench beside her. She inspected the hors d'oeuvres he had chosen, and without asking, reached over to pluck one of them for herself. It was a cheerful gathering, Fenring thought, without the whisperings of discontent that had so poisoned the palace in recent months. He was satisfied with his own efforts in this regard. Key alliances had been solidified, and the federated houses no longer made any serious talk of revolt against Shaddam. The Bene Gesserit had thrown their public support behind the Corino reign, and, no doubt, the witches had continued their machinations behind the scenes at other great houses. Fenring found it curious that many of those who'd been the most suspicious and outspoken nobles were no longer counted among the living, and even more curious that he'd had nothing to do with it. The trial of Leto Atreides had ended by fiat, and the only ones openly dissatisfied with the verdict were the Bene Tlaloks.